Well, as you can tell, I'm pretty excited about today. I've been looking forward to this for a long time, beginning this 8-week journey with you guys, Harry Potter meets Jesus. And I know some of you are excited about it too because you've told me so. But I'm also guessing this morning there might be some skeptics here. Two different kinds of skeptics. Some people love the Bible and are skeptical of this whole Harry Potter thing. Like, why are you doing that? And there may be other people here who love Harry Potter, but are skeptical of the Bible and organized religion. Well, I was trying to figure out what example could I give you guys this morning that would convince all of you that for the next 8 weeks, not only are we going to have a really good time, that we're actually going to learn real practical things about living life well, and even more importantly, about how to encounter God. And then it occurred to me that this morning is Mother's Day. So what if we looked at what Harry Potter teaches us about how to be a good mom as opposed to not such a good mom? How if we looked at what the Bible teaches us about what it means to be a good mom? So first, for those of you who are skeptical of Harry Potter and think, this isn't real literature, this is children's fantasy, and why are you even bringing like wizards and stuff into the church? It turns out we can look at three different mothers in Harry Potter and learn quite a lot. So here's the first one. The first one is Lily Potter. That is Harry's mom. And while he was a baby, an infant, this incredibly evil force came in with the intention of killing this entire family. And in that moment, this woman had a choice. And she chose to literally put her body between this evil one and her infant son. In that moment of selfless love, she chose to lay down her life to try and protect her baby son. And she was murdered. And it was a gruesome scene. And like much of the carnage in the world, you could just look at it and go, what a waste. What a waste. And yet what it turns out is that one choice in that one moment of time to act in self-sacrificial love by this mother rippled through time. Its effect just kept on rippling through time. In fact, it keeps rippling through all seven books. In fact, it ends up determining the fate of that fantasy world by the end of the last book. So what's the message in that? Every act of love is never wasted. To you young moms here, up late at night, those hours that seem like they last forever. To moms here who have poured self-sacrificial love into their family, poured self-sacrificial love into a stranger. Those acts, we do them and you're like, what's the use? Did it do anything? Yes, it did. You can never fully grasp the full ripple effect of a real, genuine act of love. Now, here's the thing. Although a mom's self-sacrificial love can help their child flourish and grow, there's another kind of mom's self-sacrificial love, which is just as sacrificial, but it actually causes a child to be emotionally and socially crippled, to be stunted. Our second example of a mom in Harry Potter is Aunt Petunia. So Harry Potter, his family is murdered, and so as an infant, he is an orphan, and so this orphan boy is put in Aunt Petunia's house. Well, she already has her own son, Dudley. And what we watch over these novels is this one woman raising two different boys in two different ways. In fact, this one woman models really bad parenting in both extremes. She does both at the same time, and both are due to the same fatal flaws in her character. You see, she cares very deeply about appearances. She wants to appear like they have their act together, like they're upwardly mobile, successful, upper-middle-class family. She cares too much about what people think of her. In fact, what other people think of her controls her. Even her own child, she can't stand the thought that her own son might not like her, and so she spoils him. She is more concerned about whether he is happy than who he is becoming. She is more concerned about his outward success than his inward character. And so she spoils him, and in so doing, cripples her. And she sends a message, and all moms, all dads, we're sending messages to our kids all the time. And the message she sends to Dudley, her own son, is this: the world owes you, and nothing is ever your fault. This other boy, Harry, was not planned to be there, and he was an inconvenience, and there's something wrong with that kid, and he doesn't fit in, and she sends messages to him as well, like, I wish you weren't here. There's something wrong with you. All the sorrow and the heartache and the disappointment in my life can be traced back to you. Now, for both these boys, this is normal, because this is all they know, until they get outside of their family system, and then they experience other families, and then Harry suddenly looks back and goes, oh, that was crazy. What happens is the third mother that he experiences, that we experience in Harry Potter, is Mrs. Weasley. So, one day, Harry's best friend Ron says, come on over to my house. So he goes over and he meets his mom. His mom is Mrs. Weasley. Now you need to know this about Mrs. Weasley. She's already got six boys and one girl. And you imagine how loud and chaotic and messy that house is, right? Just crazy. And yet, there's always room for one more. There's always this sense of, you are welcome here. This was very convicting for me to think about, because my wife and I only have two kids. And in trying to raise our two kids, we were so busy, so stressed out, such a thick schedule. Did my house really communicate, there's room for one more? You're always welcome here. Now, if you're a Harry Potter fan, you know that these Weasleys were kind of at the lower end of the social spectrum. They struggled financially. Some of the most brutal scenes in the movies are when the elite and the wealthy and the beautiful people mock them and shame them for their hand-me-down clothes and their tattered possessions. And they didn't have much, but you know what? They had each other. And they had real love. You see, Mrs. Weasley sacrificed for her children as well, but it was in a totally different way. She chose relationships and character over possessions and appearances. Okay, parents, let's think about this for our kids. She chose relationships and character over possessions and appearances. And these children also learned that they were deeply loved, but they also learned they were not the center of the universe. And they learned how to share and care deeply for others. There was lots of love, but there were also rules. And if you broke the rules, there were consequences, and you had to pay those consequences. But no matter what you did, you're always welcome home. Now, they were not the perfect family. Mrs. Weasley would get anger fits, and the husband was kind of passive. But you know what they gave him? Good enough parenting. And this is what I want you all to hear. I think a lot of us parents struggle with, am I doing a good job? Am I messing up my kid? It has to be perfect. No, it doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to be good enough. Both love and rules, consistent, and the message, you are always welcome here. There comes a moment where one of those children is alienated, cuts off ties, breaks the relationship, even though they did this really pretty good job of parenting. And the message there is, it isn't all about your parenting. So if your kids are super successful and flourishing, don't think that's because you're just such a great parent. And if your kids are struggling and brokenhearted and they're breaking your heart, don't think that means, oh, that means I'm the worst, terrible parent in the world. Because we're not in charge of the whole thing, and ultimately our kids are going to choose what they're going to choose. So all I can do is my little small part in this much bigger story. Maybe Harry Potter has more to teach us than we thought. You see, fiction It helps us to escape reality for a while, right? Like, if I'm going through a really hard time, I love reading fiction. Take me to this other place. But really good fiction gives me a new perspective on this world. Really good fiction takes you to a weird, different place to get behind your defenses and behind your prejudices so you can see your own life and this real world from a different perspective. Good fiction actually causes you, can cause you if you let it, to actually change and become a better person. Good fiction can actually make you turn toward God. So, what is the Bible have to say? Some of us here might say, oh, Mother's Day, Christianity. I've been told what Christianity teaches about women. That women should be oppressed. That the mother should be barefoot and pregnant. And the man should be the one making all the decisions and handling the finances because, you know, she's really not up for it. Is that what the Bible actually teaches? I want to show you what the Bible actually teaches. This comes from one of the oldest books in the Bible. It's called Proverbs 31. And this is the Bible giving us its example of what an ideal mom looks like. She is clothed in strength and dignity. She can laugh at the days to come. She speaks with wisdom, and faithful instruction is on her tongue. Her children arise and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. You know that whole idea of you just gotta look a pretty little thing? Listen to this. Charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Yeah, but shouldn't the man kind of handle all the money and the big questions? Well, listen to what it says. She considers a field and she buys it. Out of her earnings, she plants a vineyard. I knew I liked this lady. She sets about her work vigorously. Her arms are strong for her tasks. She sees that her trading is profitable. She opens her arms to the poor and extends her hands to the needy, just as Mrs. Weasley extended her arms and her hands to this poor, needy, lonely boy, Harry. Is that what you thought the Bible taught? That sounds to me like something for 2019 right there. Maybe the Bible has more to teach us than we realize. Maybe the Bible isn't behind us like some old irrelevant relic of the past, but rather it is out in front of us calling us into the future we were meant to have. We actually believe that God speaks through these ancient words in the present tense, like to me now. And if God really is rolling out reality and rolling out time just in front of us, wouldn't he be able to kind of come back and meet us where we are and lead us the way that we should go? I think so. Okay, well, let's say that fiction actually can help us understand the real world and it can help us understand our own situation and maybe even help us understand God. Why choose Harry Potter of all the fiction you could choose? Because in my opinion, we will never see a greater, more pervasive cultural artifact in our lifetimes. By 2018, over 500 million, that's half a billion copies of the Harry Potter series have been sold, making it the largest selling book series in the history of the world. To give you a perspective, The Lord of the Rings has sold 150 million copies, and it's been selling from 1954 till now. In the one 24-hour period where the last book was sold, in 24 hours, 8 million copies were sold. Harry Potter has been translated into 64 languages. How many languages could you even list? I think I could do like 7. It's been translated into 64 languages. There are over 70 college courses dedicated to Harry Potter literature. Why? Why? Why this unbelievable movement about it? I'll tell you why. Because beneath the surface, it speaks to the deepest longings of the human heart. There's something about it that people resonate with? Well, how does it do this? Well, I think it does it three ways. It does three things. First, and I think actually the most important, is it is brutally honest about the way life actually is. When you watch it, the characters don't always understand what's going on. And these characters aren't like these perfect, like these are all the good guys, these are all the bad guys. The good guys do bad things. And the bad guys, some of the bad guys, there's a chance for redemption for them. And for them, it seems both like, listen, to them, to these characters in this series, it feels like there's a deep plan and meaning to life. And yet at the same time, events seem random and arbitrary. Does that sound like your life? This is my experience of life. On the one hand, I do have this sense that there's a deep plan and meaning, but at the same time, things just seem to happen for no reason at all, and I can't make sense of it, both at the same time. The Harry Potter series illustrates and brings alive the teachings of the Bible, because that's exactly how the Bible describes this world. So on the back of your bulletin, I have two little fill-in-the-blanks this morning for those of you who it helps you focus or keep awake. Here's the first one. Like the Bible, the Harry Potter series takes life's unfairness, incoherence, misery, and suffering seriously. And because it does, it rings true to us. It feels authentic at some gut level that we can't even explain. But there's a second reason we love the Harry Potter series, and I think that it could best be put this way. I think we love the Harry Potter series because it gives us what we all desire, which is real friendships. These seven books trace these three friends, like beginning at like 11 years old, Harry, Ron, and Hermione, as they grow up through adolescence, as they become young adults, and through all this, they struggle with, what does it mean to be a real friend? How do I have deep relationships with other people? They try to learn about loyalty. What does loyalty mean? What does forgiving your friends mean? What does compassion mean? And they have this deep sense, we are all in this together. Is that not a deep longing of your heart? It is for me. That I could be with a band of friends and we have this sense that we are all in this together. And what we find is that the Bible teaches the same importance about friendship. In Ecclesiastes chapter 4, listen to these words, and those of you who know Harry Potter, I think as you hear these, actual images from through the books will come to your mind. If one falls down, his friend can help him up. But pity the man who falls and has no one to help him up. Also, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. A cord of three strands is not easily broken. And now listen to how the Christian life is summed up in Galatians 5:11. It says this, encourage one another and build each other up, just as in fact you are doing. Friends, this is what my life is supposed to be about. You know, sometimes, what's the purpose of my life? That is a main purpose of my life. That is what church life is meant to be. And this is what I actually see in this community. I see you guys doing this for each other, encouraging one another and building each other up. So the second way that the Harry Potter series illustrates and brings alive biblical truth is this, and this is my last little note on the back of the bulletin, that like the Bible, the Harry Potter series lifts up friendship, loyalty, compassion, and selflessness, and makes you choose between that and another way of looking at the world, which is pursuing popularity, riches, power, and selfishness. And both Harry Potter and the Bible tells us it's actually a quite difficult choice. Like, that sounds like, well, of course. But when I think about my own life, when you think about your own life, when you think about how we raise our kids, which one of these two camps am I really pursuing? And both the Bible and Harry Potter teach us that doing what's good doesn't always feel good. That you have to do the good thing, and your payment may be that you feel miserable. But it's still the right thing to do, and it's exactly what you should do. When you think literally about the whole scheme of this story, there's Harry Potter, who's kind of the hero, and Voldemort, who's kind of the satanic figure. And they both face the same question. Am I going to go the one way or the other way? And they choose the different paths. So Harry Potter has friends, but Voldemort has followers. Harry Potter pursues compassion. Voldemort pursues power. Harry Potter lives in community. Voldemort basically is alone and isolated. And this is the truth. If you spend your life pursuing popularity and riches and power and selfishness, you will end up isolated and alone. Okay, one more reason. The third reason we love Harry Potter is because in the very act of the loyal friendship we've been talking about, it lifts up the possibility of for what many of us is an unspoken hope of the human heart, and that is resurrection from death. Hope for something beyond death. Hope that our lives are connected to those who've already gone beyond. Hope that our lives matter and are connected to some kind of bigger story. And ironically, in the real world and in this series, it begins, though that hope begins with death. Jesus stood up in the middle of time and said, "Greater love has no one than this, that he laid down his life for his friends." And if you look at Harry Potter through that lens, you find this being lived out again and again, where people are learning to be like Christ-like, getting to the point in their lives where they're actually willing to lay down their lives for the sake of their friends. But then you look at Jesus, the ultimate. It says, "For God so loved the whole world that he gave his one and only son." It says that Jesus died for the sins of the world. So when he says that he is laying down his life for his friends, who's he laying it down for? He's laying it down for you. You might say, "Well, I don't even know if I believe in Jesus." He's laying it down for you. He calls you his friend. Is that what you thought the Bible taught? Okay, is it true? This is what I want you to wrestle with. Because we believe here in this church that Jesus made a way through death and that there is new life on the other side of death and that that can be yours. But for now, for this day, how are we to live here and now? The very Christ-like wise leader in Harry Potter, his name is Albus Dumbledore, and there comes this key moment in the series where he turns to Harry and he says, "It is not our abilities that show what we truly are, it's our choices," which is exactly the opposite of what our culture teaches us. Our culture teaches us it's the athlete born with natural abilities, like he's what matters. It's the brainiac who was just born with natural intelligence. Oh, they're what matters. And we actually say what really matters are your abilities. But what Dumbledore is doing here is actually echoing the ancient teaching of Jesus. Jesus said, "You shall know them by their fruit." Fruit is what is produced in your life based on the choices you make. You see, God isn't impressed by my abilities. He gave them to me. God isn't impressed by my power. He gave me that too. What God cares about is, Langdon, what are you choosing? That is what makes you. That is what is important. When is the only time I can actually make a choice. In the present, I just want you to let that sink in for a minute. When is the only time I can make a choice? The only time I can actually make a choice is in the present. Wallowing in shame over your past failures will not change a thing, but it will wreck you. Wallowing in worry about the future and what it might bring won't change a thing, but it will wreck you. God and His Word call you to live in the present tense because this is where you can make choice this day. All right, well, how do we learn to live like that? How do we learn to actually live in the present tense? Jesus comes to us and He says this, "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. Learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls." So my question for you this morning is, are you willing? Are you willing to join us for these next 7 Sundays? Are you willing to hear Jesus teach us what He has to say? For now, until next Sunday, I'm giving you homework. So every Sunday, I am going to give you homework. I'm going to give you a verse to memorize and a question to ponder. When we memorize Scripture, it gets God's story inside of us. And so the verse I want you to memorize this week is that one we just heard. Greater love has no one than this, that He lay down His life for His friends, because that is the center of the Christian gospel. And as you bury that in your mind, if you're a Harry Potter fan, you'll start to see this rising up all over the place. And that was J.K. Rowling's intention, by the way. And then I want to give you a question to ponder. How open are you to the possibility that God wants to use you in your friends' lives to help them know Him? You might say, are you kidding me? Like, I don't even know if I believe. And like, I'm full of questions and doubts. Yeah, okay, that's all right for now. I want you to imagine this. I want you to see it in your mind. What would it look like? What would it look like to see yourself being used by God in your friends' lives to help them come to know Him? So, whether you're a mom this morning or the rest of us, God is calling you to choose to live in the present tense. Wallowing in your shame over your failures in the past won't change anything, but it will wreck you. Wallowing in your worry about what's going to happen in the future won't change a thing, but it will wreck you. This is the only place you can live in the present, because this is the day you can begin to live your life right if you have regret over the past. This is the day you can begin to build what you can for the future if you're worried about the future, because this is the day that the Lord has made. This is the day that the Lord has made. And therefore, in the midst of my troubles, I can rejoice and I will be glad in it. Amen.